of the crop.
Welcome to the Gula Podcast, number 132. We are here after the shocking results against Anderlecht and Swansea. Never has an international break seemed more appealing. Just like Have I Got News For You, we have another guest host, this time in the form of me, Mark Ollington. Unlike the old host of that popular BBC news quiz, previous leader of this parish, David Udo, wasn't fired for taking drugs and doing some naughty sex stuff. Oh no, we actually like that type of thing here at the Gula. We just want to keep things fresh, vibrant and sexy. Hopefully I can be at least one of those things today as I step into the chair at the other side of the table. But enough about me. It's all about the panel. And let me tell you, this is as good as it gets. We have three legendary figures from the world of the Gula. Panels do not come more heavyweight and prestigious than this. First up is a man who has been up and down like a bride's nightie with his views on Wenger over the years. Where will the cookie crumble tonight? It's the always controversial, the never dull, the internally baby-faced Highbury spy, known to his friends and the tax man as Steve Ashford. How are you?
I've been better, actually, Mark. Tell a lie, I've been better. I was all right till 4 o'clock yesterday.
Well, Steve, we should hear some of those views later tonight.
Absolutely.
But welcome.
Thank you very much.
Next up, we have a great panellist, the Gula editor. The AKBs get cross with this guy all the time. So much so that if you ever read his comments under his online editorials, you wonder if he should take out death by sniper in insurance. But he is much loved on this pod. His hard-hitting, no-nonsense style makes even the most heterosexual of men bow at his feet. It is, of course, Kevin Witcher.
I wasn't aware, but thank you for informing me of that.
Very, very true. And last, but certainly not least, it is someone whose appearances here are rarer than Abu Dhabi. But unlike poor old Dhabi, when he does come out, we get a full-on performance, full of commitment, and with no fear that his legs could explode at any moment. It is a former editor of the Gula, now its publisher, and the dude who pays for this pod and the free meal we get for doing it. It is the man, the legend, the beating heart of the Gula, it's Mike Francis.
Hello. You've not really built me up there, haven't you?
Mike, you've got a lot to live up to.
I've got a lot to live up to now, yeah.
Well, what a panel, eh? And a good job too, as we have some pretty weighty matters to discuss. And this pod takes a bit of a different turn tonight because you've been tweeting in your questions, which is fantastic. This is really the first interactive Gula podcast, so that's extremely good fun. But before we get to your tweets, I'm going to ask the first question. And this is to our esteemed editor, Kevin. Kevin, Anderlecht and Swansea, what went wrong?
Well, what went wrong is that we were ahead in the games and continued going for goals. It was classic gung-ho gunners. And were exposed because, I mean, aside from concerns about the strength of the back four and the depth, the midfield in front of them kind of abdicated their duty and invited the opposition to get back in the game. The amazing thing is that everyone can see it. It's not rocket science what's going on. And yet, after it happened once against Anderlecht, and it's happened many times before in the past, but it, you know, it happened on Tuesday night against Anderlecht, you'd have thought only 5 days later that there might be some thought either amongst the players or from the bench that once you establish a lead, you defend it. However, not Arsenal. We've got to entertain the troops out there. We've got to thrill the audience. And the one thing you will say about Arsenal matches on television at the moment, you know, goals are guaranteed at both ends. And if you don't care about the result, you're going to enjoy it. The one thing I did when Arsenal went to 1-0 ahead at Swansea was quickly put a bet on a double chance of a draw or a home win. I got odds of 3-1 on that, so I made some money from Arsenal's inevitable collapse. I suggest our fans who enjoy the in-play betting markets look for similar opportunities in the future, because as I said in my piece after the Anderlecht game, why wouldn't you trust an Arsene Wenger team to take your dog for a walk? Because it can't hold a lead. And this has been going on for quite some time. There was a good old gap, you know. I mean, the end of 2012-13, we had to get some results and we started playing like a team almost in the George Graham mould 1-0 wins and boring the pants off everybody. Last season, again, we were hanging on to leads. Now, why suddenly the midfield have decided to go walkabout this season, I do not know. But it's back to some of the worst of Arsenal that we have seen in the last sort of 8 years.
And, well, we haven't got a midfield, though, Ken, have we, really? I mean, when Arteta goes, and the lamentable form of Ramsey, Wilshere didn't play in the Anderlecht or the Swansea games, your midfield is basically Flamini. And he was past it last year, should have been replaced in the summer. There isn't a midfield. No wonder teams just wander through it at will. And yesterday, it was criminal. Everyone could see that Montero was tearing Chambers apart. Why on earth? I mean, I was texting all my mates, you know, give Chambers some backup. Get some help out there for him. Get Bellerin on. At least he's got pace, this guy Bellerin. He's supposed to be the fastest fullback ever. So I'm thinking, why did Wenger let Jenkinson go if he didn't have any faith in Bellerin? Because he clearly hasn't got any faith in Bellerin. Otherwise, he'd play him or bring him on as a substitute. We would look far more balanced if Bellerin was at right back, Chambers was partnering Mertesacker in the middle. Because I think, having seen Chambers for most of this season, I would say that he's a better centre-half than he is a right back, certainly at this stage in his career. We could all see that yesterday. Wenger couldn't see it. We had no midfield protection. We could have brought Wilshere on a lot earlier when we were 1-0 up, told him to protect that back four. Could have brought Bellerin on. We didn't need Walcott. We should have started with Walcott. We didn't need Walcott coming on. We needed Bellerin and Wilshere. But our clueless manager couldn't see it. The only person in the world that couldn't. So depressing.
But that's the thing, isn't it? It's like the last two games, the Anderlecht game, it's like, you know, there was however many people in the stadium that were there, you know, 40-something thousand. It certainly wasn't any more than that. And everyone was saying the same thing coming out of the grounds. Why didn't we see what was happening and put Bellerin on? You know, the problems were all down the left-hand side against Anderlecht.
Yeah.
And they scored the first goal from there. They created two or three chances after. Penalty came from that side. And it was like, you know, hang on, we've got a right-sided defender on the bench here who's lightning quick. Why don't we bring him on? Play him in front of Chambers. Whatever you want to do, but give him some support. And it was exactly the same yesterday.
Kev and I sat next to each other for the Anderlecht game. And as early as about the 10th minute, I said to Kev, I said, that Achimpong, that guy number 18, he's tearing Chambers apart. As we've got to be careful here, otherwise they'll score through him. sure enough, they did.
We've got two tweets here, Steve. Mark Holmes says, why do you think Wenger's teams have not learned from the same mistakes? And Krista Johnson, similar thing you've been chatting about there. Why have people, Bellerin, why use people that are never used? Should have lifted Chambers at half time at least. So why isn't Wenger, why hasn't he learned? And why, as you mentioned, do you think he doesn't see what's going on during a match? Why did Chambers, who was getting absolutely slaughtered in that game, why did nothing happen? Is it down to the man Wenger?
Of course, absolutely. His in-game management is appalling. You've only got to look at Mourinho. He's the best manager in the world, in my opinion. And that's why Chelsea is so far ahead. If that was a Mourinho team and one of his full-backs was getting roasted by a winger, first thing he would do, no matter what time of the game it was, 20th minute, 30th minute, 40th minute, he would do something to rectify that. If he had a perfectly speedy alternative right-back on the bench, he'd bring him on, no question. And if he'd won up with 15 minutes to go, Mourinho would just make sure that goal is not breached. That would never happen. You just knew when Chelsea went 2-1 up at Liverpool on Saturday, you knew Liverpool weren't going to score, apart from a penalty, which could have been given for a dodgy handball. But you just knew, by and large, they were not going to score an open play, and they didn't. And it never happens against Chelsea. But, you know, I know us, it's just criminal. Wenger never makes an in-game substitution that wins us the match. But and I think that, as much as anything, is why people are so frustrated with him.
But it's as much because he trusts his players, isn't it? I mean, we've seen it, you know, over the last 18 years, that he believes the players that he puts out there are intelligent enough to learn and from what they're doing and see where it's going wrong themselves without needing that direction.
Mm.
Well, you know, maybe in the Invincibles era, we had the players which had the footballing brain, you know, something Theo's been accused of not having. Well, I'm beginning to wonder whether we've got 11 of them that haven't got a footballing brain because... Mm. You know, Chambers was just stuck out there. And, yeah, Wenger should have done something. And I think that, you know, we all agreed on that. But, frankly, so should the players on the pitch. Mm. You know, Mertesacker should have been saying, Christ, Ox, drop back, give him some help. Even if it's only for 10 minutes, give him some help. Flamini or whoever, you know, there are players out there with lots of experience that should be seeing that happening and doing something about it.
Yeah, what do you think to that, Kev? You know, Wenger's tactics? I mean, does the guy have any tactics?
At the start of the game yesterday, I thought there was a response to the Anderlecht's performance in that we were, certainly for the first half, trying to close them down. We were harassing them in their own half. You know, for a portion of the game, our forwards were actually chasing down the ball and making it difficult for Swansea to play. So I'm sure that was a direct instruction. You know, I think they were sent out with basically the plan. I mean, the thing about Alexis Sanchez is he learned this under Guardiola at Barcelona, and that's why he does it all the time anyway. But the other players were also doing it as well. And I thought, well, good, you know, this is what we want to see, work rate, winning the ball back. We forced a couple of chances in the first half through basically just dispossessing them, getting on top of them. So there was some element of something different at the start of the game, but what it was is we fell into bad habits once we established the lead, because that lead was very hard thought, and you know, once we had
they weren't a bad side, were they, Ken? They weren't a bad side, to be honest.
No, I mean, you know, in fairness, I wouldn't begrudge them the win. I mean, it could have been a draw probably overall, but the long and short of it is Arsenal had to work damn hard to get that lead. And once they did, it didn't seem very important to them to protect it. You know, it seemed more important than to get 2-0 rather than keep it 1-0.
What makes it so frustrating? We got away with the penalty when Chambers pushed Bonnie in the first half. Clear penalty. Yeah. And we were lucky to get away with that. You know, they were a good side. We've gone one up. And as Kev rightly says, we've worked very, very hard. It was a great goal. I mean, when Chamberlain was running through before he fed Welbeck, two of them tried to chop him. And luckily, he avoided it. We've scored, and you're thinking, right, brilliant. This is a very hard game to win. Let's just make sure we don't lose it now. Okay, the brilliant free kick was a one in a million.
Yeah, but it's what led to the free kick that was the crime.
I mean,
second players in there off.
49 times out of 50, 99 times out of 100, that doesn't go in. It goes over the bar or into the wall. We were unlucky there. But let's just keep the point. Once that's happened, let's keep the point.
Well, you don't overcommit. And I mean, it's long been a problem with Arsenal. That they have, but going back to the midfield, we don't have a midfield. Who was anchoring the midfield last season when we were winning these sort of games? It was Arteta and Ramsey. So okay, you've got Flamini and Ramsey. Are you telling me Arteta's the difference?
Yeah, I think he is.
So
I
think if Arteta had played yesterday, we'd have won that game.
Possibly, we'd have had a better chance.
What do you think, Mike?
Well, the interesting thing was, you go back to the Burnley game where we'd been on a run where we conceded a few goals, and we started at home to Burnley, and we played Arteta and Flamini, didn't we? And I think, you know, there was a lot of raised eyebrows from Arsenal fans going, Jesus, yeah, we're starting with two defensive midfield players and get home to Burnley. It's like, but I think the reason for that was because just to give ourselves some solidity on which to build, which, you know, we didn't, I can't remember exactly when we scored, but I think we'd taken one of them off by then.
Yeah, who was it?
I think Flamini went off that one.
Okay.
But it was like, you know, but then you go away to Swansea and, okay, Arteta wasn't available, but you've still got, as Kev said, you've still got Ramsey there. We'll play Ramsey and I mean, Ramsey was told in no uncertain terms after the Anderlecht game, stop bloody glory hunting the goal, do your job. And yet him and Flamini were both ahead of the ball when they broke for that free kick. You know, and Gibbs was almost ahead of the ball himself. You know, it's like we almost had Mertesacker and Monreal left to defend it.
That leads to another question, though. Why are all of our midfield players, when I say all of them, Wilshere, Arteta, Flamini predominantly, because that's the only three we've got. Why Rizicki, who never plays, why have they all gone down in form this year? Why has their form deserted?
Well, that's the question, Steve. And something else that's been asked is, if you think about all the performances this season, we're nearly a third of the way into the season, you can count on one hand how many good games has actually been.
Yeah.
And you got that game against Villa, but the Villa team had come down with sickness. That Turkish team.
Well, even the Villa game was like a 5-minute purple patch, wasn't it? I mean, the rest of it was pretty dull.
The Galatasaray game, we went 4-0 up, right? If you remember, they got a penalty back, 4-1. And after that, Ospina saved three certain goals. Yeah. So we nearly collapsed against them.
So the question,
with any more speed, they kept us in that game.
Yeah. So your question, Steve, about why the players gone downhill? You could potentially argue it's only our new signings that are doing the business.
Yeah.
Kev, why is that? Why has it been such a dip in form with the players that were on song last season?
Well, we were playing differently last season. I mean, you know, we've got to remember that we had a different style in that Giroud was the centre forward. Ozil was playing behind him most of the time. We are set up differently this season, and in a way you might make the argument that they're still adapting. I mean, Sanchez is a brilliant player, but as a team we haven't integrated him into what we were doing before. The whole team is now changing to adapt to Sanchez and Welbeck. So in a sense we're reinventing the wheel simply because Giroud got injured. If Giroud had not got injured, we probably wouldn't have bought Welbeck. It would have just been a matter of adapting to Sanchez, which might have been more straightforward. So in a way, I think unless you've got top quality players, and we don't have many really top grade players.
But isn't that an indictment on Wenger's management? We don't have a great deal of top quality players.
If you compare us with other teams that have got top quality players, you've got to look at why they're top quality. And in some instances, it's because they were bought already being at that level. And other ways, it's because they've been coached to reach that level. And sometimes it's just playing with other top level players that brings them up a level. So if you think about Chelsea, if you think about a player like Matic, you know, he was playing with Benfica and they weren't pulling up many trees, I suspect. I don't know, I didn't watch much Portuguese football, but now he's in amongst better players, he suddenly looks almost world class. So players, I mean, Ashley Cole was a classic example of that. You know, he was almost lost to Arsenal, to Palace. The whole Silvinho passport scandal erupted.
Why would Wenger want to do that?
Well, because Wenger doesn't rate English players, doesn't trust English players, technically. Now, he's changed his mind of late because he knows all the continental players are just going to bugger off. So he's now realised he's actually got to get players in who are going to stick around, and there's a lot more chance of that happening if they're English.
Poor old Jenkinson didn't get...
Jenkinson was not kept around. Wenger doesn't rate Jenkinson, in all fine fairness. You know, he took a punt on him for £1 million. Obviously, Wenger isn't satisfied, I suspect, with his technique.
But he doesn't rate Bellerin either, by the look of it.
Well, that's interesting, because Bellerin isn't English, and he's young, so you've got to wonder there what the thought is. He obviously trusts Monreal more, and that's presumably an error of judgment. But Wenger is a judge of players. Sometimes he gets it right, sometimes he gets it wrong. But going back to Cole, he was put in alongside Adams, and he was operated, and Campbell, and he was operated on strings, and he developed as a player through being basically worked by the much more experienced player next to him.
We can't tell what a good player Cole was, though, even at 18, 19.
I don't know that's true, because I could say that about a lot of... I mean, I still think we should have hung on to Larsson. Why did we let Larsson go? I thought Larsson looked good when he played for us.
Yeah, he's only had technique.
Well, what about Carl Bartley yesterday? We're in desperate need of a centre-half, and one of their ex-centre-halves was playing for Swansea.
Mike, what's your view of the current squad in comparison to, say, last season or the season before? We haven't gone out, we have spent cash, players have obviously left, but what is your view of the current squad?
Well, the squad, in terms of numbers and quality, should be better, but that's not what we're seeing on the pitch. I mean, Sanchez, you know, he's come in and, it's hard to fault him. He gives away a little ball away a little bit too often, but, you know, he generally wins it back as well, so you can't really argue with it. But everyone else just seems to have gone backwards. You know, you go through the whole squad. Welbeck's come in and I think he's done okay. The Ox has had a couple of good games in the last week, probably, but he had an absolute shocker. I can't remember which game it was, but... Burnley,
the one before Burnley,
wasn't it? The one before Burnley. Yeah, you know, the shocker in that game. You know, I think his pass percentage was about 10% complete.
Yeah, awful. I remember that game.
But you know, but then you look at the back four, and you know, well, Mertesacker has basically admitted that he's, you know, fair play to him for actually coming out and saying it. But he said, you know, he's lost the motivation after the World Cup, and he's only took him 3 months to get it back. You know, it's great. I'm glad we're paying you 60 grand a week.
Alternative centre halves. If we had a squad Mertesacker wouldn't be playing, would he?
You can't drop. That's the position Wenger's left himself in. He can't drop central defenders for form reasons.
But we're not dropping anyone. I mean, the player that deserves to be dropped most, in my opinion, at the moment, is Cazorla. I can't think of anything that he's done this season. And his corner taking is, oh, Jesus.
When I was talking about the midfield earlier, I completely forgot about him because he's just not there.
Yeah, so, I mean, and as you say, you know, Rosicki, who is probably past it, in all honesty, but at least he comes on and gives a shift. Yeah. Well, I'll be playing him. I'll be playing anyone.
Let's be fair. Football is a squad game in this day and age. You've got a game every two games a week, most weeks. And when you get a week off, the players are all playing in internationals. You know, everyone's got a 20-man squad, which a lot of Premier League teams utilise. Why does Wenger run the same 12 or 13 players into the ground and exclude the other 7 or 8? I mean, this year alone, Podolski, Rosicki, Joel Campbell, Bellerin, they've all been completely ignored. So when they are called upon, they're going to say, why should I play for this idiot of a manager? He's ignored me for 4 months. And now he expects me to come in and get him out of a hole.
Well, Joel Campbell came on in a couple of games, didn't he?
Yeah, and looked very good.
It was quite good, and you know, made a difference in the games. And then, you know, he's not even in the reckoning. Suddenly, Snow goes back fit, and that's by Joel Campbell.
Well, these players are going to go in January, or they're going to want to go in January, and we'll have a squad of 13 players, and they'll all be totally knackered. It's so worrying.
Well, with 5 minutes to him go against Anderlecht, what was it, away from home, he brought on a German player, come on, scored the winner yesterday, 5 minutes to go, brings on Sonogo. Fascinating, Wenger. Speaking of our great manager, lots of tweets been coming about him. I'll start with Mike with this one for you. If Arsenal missed out on the top four, do you think the panel think Wenger would actually resign, or would the board sack him?
No,
you don't think, you think
simple as that.
You think there's no chance of him going?
I said yesterday on Twitter after the game, I said the only person that's going to make a decision about what happens from now on for the next 2.5 years is Wenger. The board, one, they won't sack him, and two, even if they did, I wouldn't trust them to bloody appoint a new manager. They'd probably appoint Bold because he'd be cheap. And I just think Wenger has the level of arrogance that he will feel, I can turn this around, don't worry, it'll be fine. And unless there is so much, you know, grief he gets from the fans, which again I don't see happening, unless that turns inside the ground, I think he'll go, it's all right, we'll be fine.
Kev, if we were, say, 8th come Christmas, do you think that's still the case? Do you think he's safe as houses?
Yeah, because even 8th come Christmas, he'll think he can get 4th. I mean, the thing about it is, he is obviously quite obsessed by financial minutiae, and that would include his own wages. So he knows that if he's sacked, he will get a huge payoff. So he's not going to resign. So it's down to the board to sack him. Well, the board are going to be very reluctant to do that. And ultimately, the board is, in terms of decision making, Stan Kroenke. And Kroenke is perfectly content. You know, I mean, we are still with a decent chance of getting in the top four over the course of a season, simply because all the teams are beating each other.
But after the FA Cup win, weren't the expectations meant to be greater now? Wasn't it meant to be about...
Well, no, whose expectations?
Well, ours.
No, I'm talking about the person that matters. Stan Kroenke's expectations.
You think Wenger's expectations is just now to come forth after spending whatever he spent on...
Well, no, Wenger will always want to win. Wenger wants desperately to win trophies. He wants to do it on his terms.
If Wenger wanted to win trophies that badly, if he wanted to compete with Chelsea that badly, if he really wanted to win the Champions League, why did he leave himself short of centre-backs this year? Why are we playing with an average keeper?
Well, because he doesn't trust
why have we got two ancient people in the midfield?
Because he doesn't trust his own scouting team. And Ian Wright said on Radio 5 yesterday that he knows for a fact, presumably because he was told by him, the man himself, that Steve Bold recommended certain players to the club that we could buy.
Yeah.
Wenger isn't interested in what Bold thinks.
Well, that's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, because Gary Nichols Gary Nichols tweets in, what actually is Steve Bold's contribution to the team? But is it Steve Bold's fault he can't?
He lays out the cones very well.
Well, but I think everything
we'll come
that
back
Kev
to
says,
Stuart Houston days.
Everything that Kev says about Wenger, I mean, it's digging a deeper and deeper hole for Wenger to jump into. Because clearly, he's not doing the best he can for the football club. If he doesn't listen to Steve Bould, if he just does whatever he wants, if he expects to win trophies with this ridiculous back four we've got, and rubbish keeper.
But the problem is, that's always the way he's done it.
Yeah.
It's not changed. But and he was very successful in the first 10 years. 9 years. So like, what has changed now? He can probably convince himself that I did it that way and it worked. So that would work again.
The first 5 years, he had Tony Adams, Martin Keogh, and Sol Campbell, Dixon, Winterburn.
We know that. Parler. Yeah. He doesn't. I don't think he gives the credit to those players or enough credit to those players for what happened in those years.
I mean, what happened in those years was that the tactical stuff that was going on the field was sorted out by the players.
Mm.
And it's interesting that when England was successful in the World Cup under Bobby Robson, it's because the players took over the team.
Well, you go back to 97-98 season and that game at home to Blackburn, wasn't it? Just before Christmas, 3-1 defeat.
Yeah.
This story is well documented. After that game, Adams said to Petit and Vieira, you're not doing your effing job, you need to protect us. You've got to do your job in front of us. And Martin Keown on Match of the Day 2 last night said it, you know, about Mertesacker, he said, as a central defender, you get your midfield working their arse off because then you don't have to.
Mm.
And we're not doing that.
No.
But that's what happened in 97-98. Yeah. That's why Vieira and Petit became such animals and we went on.
But surely Wenger's clever enough and intelligent enough to realise that the players he's got now just aren't good enough to do that or to win him trophies.
He doesn't realise that.
You know, well, then let's get a new manager.
Hallelujah. Yeah. If only.
But so the question is, will Wenger be sacked? We'll say no. Yeah. He'll be there by hook or by crook. Do you think now, Steve, you're a man of the people, you know, you're there. You're the voice of the fans.
Saying a war.
Where would you say the kind of split is now amongst the Arsenal supporters of pro or anti Wenger? Well, at this current moment in time.
Well, I said in my last column, Stan Collymore on Talk Sport, he reckoned that the amount of Arsenal fans that ring him up, right?
I'm not sure this is like a good stat, Steve. Anyway, carry on.
That he reckoned 70% of Arsenal fans that ring Talk Sport, not just his show, but all of the shows, want Wenger out. And I said that I would roughly agree with that. I find it very difficult to go into a pub these days and find someone who's pro-Wenger. You go to any pub around Arsenal, I know they're just drinkers, essentially.
Yeah.
I don't speak to the blokes who just get on the tube and go home straight after the game. They might all be Wenger's greatest fans. But the guys, the intelligent ones that like a drink, I would say 70% of them want Wenger out. Look online, it's probably 80% of fans want Wenger out. There are whole websites that, you know, like the Gooner and Le Grove being one of them, that want Wenger out. I find it, Arsenal TV, all the after-match interviews, you're hard-pushed to find anyone that supports Wenger.
So Steve, with his talk sport type stuff, thinks he's 70%. Mike, what do you reckon the ratio might come out
of? I think Steve's right, but that's of people that go on talk sport and go on websites and give an opinion. I'm not sure that's reflective.
Right.
You know, it's like saying, how often do you ring up British Gas and say, thanks, you did a great job this week. I've had gas every day.
Yeah.
But if you're out without it for a day, you're on the phone to them first thing. Yeah. So it's the people that want to moan, will moan. Mm. The people that don't, stay quiet and you don't hear from them.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's still pretty close to 50-50, but I think we're close to a tipping point.
What do you reckon?
Do you reckon we get a full-scale fan revolt at Arsenal?
I think if it continues, then yes. But the thing about Wenger is he will always pull just about enough results out to quell the masses. I mean, someone said to me that at the Wigan semi-final, they thought the crowd was on the edge of turning. And that if we hadn't have actually equalised and we'd lost that game, that would have been it in terms of the crowd.
I agree with that.
I think that shows
the potential. Because you've got to remember, everyone at that semi-final was pretty much a season ticket holder.
Yes.
So these are the regulars, in theory. So it could happen.
And the Villa game against, it was the opening day of last season.
There's been a few tipping points. Where it could have gone either way. And as Kev said, he's always just done enough and pulled it back from the brink. But I mean, you know, every away game now, you hear about Arsenal fans turning on Arsenal fans. Yeah. It was kicking off yesterday at Swansea. It was going off in Anderlecht, you know.
They were singing, we want Wenger out.
You know, so yeah. that's the most depressing thing, that you've now got this real division between the fans. Is that, you know, if And it's a huge if, and I don't think it will happen. But if Wenger was to go, you'd have 50% of fans going, I can't believe you've driven him out. To the other 50% who've gone, well, that's the only conclusion we had to come to.
But when we
and if we get a new manager in, and he doesn't start with the games immediately, he does what Van Gaal's done at Man United, and he's like, oh, it's transition and rebuilding and all that. The fans that were going, I told you we should never have sacked Wenger. So that division, even if Wenger was to leave, is going to remain for the foreseeable.
But that's the thing, though, Mike. Wenger is his own worst enemy, because when we won the FA Cup, he had everyone behind him.
Yeah.
Yeah,
250,000 people. You know, even I had a tear in my eye. Oh, dear old bloke. Lovely old bloke. Won the FA Cup. Let's give him another 3 years. He'll change. Right?
So we all did.
I know. Everyone did. So,
in all fairness, I didn't. Great way to bow out, Arsene.
Yeah. It would have been a great way, but perfect opportunity. He goes out and signs Sanchez. Great idea. Chambers, great idea. Good centre-back, not such a good right-back. Welbeck, fantastic. Really good. Who else did we sign? Debussy. Great signing.
Ospina, been injured. Ospina, yeah, really good. Could be decent.
So you're thinking, right, he's on the right track here. Maybe he's changed a bit. Maybe he's going to do a bit of in-game management. He's going to make substitutions after 50 minutes instead of 70 minutes. Maybe he's going to sign those two central defenders we need. Maybe he's going to get that monster of a central midfielder. And then everyone's going to love him and it's going to be brilliant. But typical Wenger, he just couldn't go through with it, could he? He had to stop halfway, so the fans were once again divided. Oh, well, I think I have enough. The keeper's fine. The centre-backs are fine. You know. And everyone goes, oh, no, Arsene, you've let us down again. And those divisions have started.
Very true, Steve. So, Kev, with all this in mind, and this very optimistic podcast, what are your expectations now for the rest of the season?
Arsenal will start winning games again.
I wouldn't put this all on that.
Well, they will. I mean, Wenger always manages.
They won four all season.
I think that. Let's just talk about top four, okay? Chelsea, yes. Man City, yes. And then you've got two spots which are up for contention, and you've got a few teams that can do it, okay? You know, we've got Giroud to come back. We've got Koscielny to come back. We've got Theo to start playing regularly. Debussy to come back. You know, that's the frustrating thing.
Players probably will get injured in that time.
They will, probably.
The other half of the squad will.
I'm just going on experience. And, you know, the law of Murphy says that Wenger will wangle his way into fourth spot on the last day of the season.
Is that good enough for you, Kev?
Not for me. No, absolutely not. You know, Arsenal are a huge club. They should be winning trophies. There's no issue there. I've been saying for years that we need a manager who can get more out of the group of players we've got. Because we've got players who can win things. I mean, the hugely frustrating thing about Alexis is that he is a winner. You know, he's the kind of player you have in your team that's going to win you trophies. The problem is that the players around him are not organised and motivated enough to actually see that through. And if you look at this season, you know, if we had a better team, if we'd have beaten Chelsea, if we'd have picked up the points this team should have picked up, we would be in first place. Okay? The problem is that obviously the manager doesn't prepare the team properly, doesn't set them out properly, doesn't motivate them. If you had a motivator, and when we lost to Blackburn in the FA Cup about a season and a half ago, said then in that editorial, what this team needs is a Mourinho. If Mourinho arrived and took charge of these players, we would be winning things and getting results.
Exactly.
I was slagged off for it. I wonder now.
You always are, aren't you?
Yeah, I always am. But I wonder now if fans would accept Mourinho if they were offered him now.
Well, I think that 70% would. That 70% that want Wenger out would accept Mourinho.
Because I don't think there's a lot of difference in many respects between Mourinho and George Graham in terms of their profile. Okay, I know Mourinho is a bit more over the top, but times have changed. If George Graham was of this era, I suspect he'd have been a bit more annoying to opposition fans.
The showbiz aspect of the Premier League these days.
Yes.
But while we're talking about Mourinho, he's never going to leave Chelsea.
No, I'm sort of giving... We could have got him We could have got him then.
Yeah. Even a couple of years ago. Mike, we're living in dreamland, but would you swap tomorrow, Wenger, for Mourinho, if you could, tomorrow morning?
I'm giving it to you on a plate, Mike.
Oh, God.
Seriously, Mike.
I hate Mourinho with a passion.
Exactly. But you'd love him if he was after manager. So, that's the point.
Someone says to you, Mike, you are publisher of the Gooner. We've loved your work for nearly 30 years or whatever it is. You can have Mourinho tomorrow. What would you do?
You've got to take him because he's going to... Yeah, Kev's right. He will deliver success. And, you know, despite how unpleasant a character he is, we've had plenty of unpleasant characters at Arsenal over the years, and we love him because of it. See, and, you know, you only got to ask Chelsea fans what they think of Mourinho. They adore him. Mm. And that's not just because he's delivered trophies. That's got a large part of it. But it's just he sticks up for Chelsea. And he does everything right for the club.
He's like a fan on the pitch, isn't he? Like yesterday, we could all see that Chambers were getting roasted. Mourinho would see that and do something about it.
Yeah, protect the poor lad.
I mean,
the guy's obviously got him talent, but he's been hung out to dry playing in every single match.
That's the thing with Wenger. I feel I'm so disconnected with Arsene Wenger for a million reasons.
Wenger doesn't have a single moment for you, Steve.
No, exactly. No.
Or any other support.
And I've heard, Steve, he's a much bigger fan of Mickey Cannon.
I'm sure he is.
That's just the way it is, mate.
I'm sure he is.
I think the
manager should have a connection with the fans, though, shouldn't he?
He should have, but there is a fundamental disconnect between Wenger and supporters. And in fact, it's interesting that the event that they used to have where shareholders asked him questions at the end of every season has completely disappeared. And that is because Wenger has complete contempt for anyone who would question his methods.
Well, that's something that's come out a lot in the last couple of weeks, hasn't it? I mean, he had a right go at Merson. And he actually said, I've got no respect for anyone that's never managed. Well, Merson didn't manage very well, but he has actually managed. What did he say that any one of us wasn't saying?
Yeah.
You know, he said, we're tactically clueless.
Do you know what?
Spot on the mark.
I would swap Wenger for Merson tomorrow.
Never mind Mourinho. Take Merson. Things are really desperate.
Things have got bad. Yeah. So look, Matt Fosker tweeted in, what realistically defines success for our club? With everything that's now gone on, Mike, where do you reckon, what's the best of all, I mean, we mentioned there, what's the best we can possibly hope for?
Well, after the Dortmund away game, I was out with we were in Dortmund, so we'd had plenty of German beer, and this probably came into what I then came out with. But we started talking about where we're going to finish, because we'd obviously been horrendous against Dortmund. And I said, I still think we'll finish third, because Chelsea have blown us away. Man City have just got a squad, they'll come good. And even that's looking a bit dubious. And the rest, we were better than all the rest. By margin.
Well, we were last year.
But this was at Dortmund, so this was what, mid September. You know, so we hadn't seen a lot of it. I thought, things will gel, it will come good. I have to say, 2 months on, I'm now not so sure. Mm. I think third. I tend to agree with Kev that I still think we'll be there or thereabouts. So, but yeah, Southampton.
If you look at them,
probably not. Man United, I think, will pull it together, and I think they will get in the top four. Liverpool, I think they're the team that we need to beat. If we beat Liverpool, we'll finish fourth.
Yeah. What about West Ham and Southampton?
No, they're not. They won't sustain it.
No,
Steve.
Even though Southampton have got 5-6 players that we would love to have playing for us.
I want your prediction now. Where do you think we're going to come?
Fifth. We'll narrowly miss out.
Where did you say this time last year we'd finish?
Probably fifth or sixth. And last year we had a better team. They were playing better. If you look at the game-to-game ratio, the opposition result ratio between this year and last year, if you look at the 11 games we've played this year, we only won 4 of them. Across those 11 games last year, we would have won about 8 or 9 of them. Spurs at home, Swansea away, one of the promoted teams away that we drew at Leicester. Our results this season against our opponents compared to last season have been appalling. And if that carries on, because I've got no reason to think we're going to beat Manchester City at Main Road, Man United at Old Trafford, Spurs at White Hart Lane, no reason to think we're going to do that. So if the results carry on the way they are, different against us. We could well end up finishing 6th or 7th if results carry on the way they are against opponents that we played last year.
My word. Let's focus in the last 10 minutes on the positive. Let's try to give our listeners something to grasp upon. Two words for you, Steve. Yeah. Alexis Sanchez. He has been the guiding light of our season so far. In the last month since the last podcast, the guy's gone from strength to strength, nabbed goal after goal.
Yeah, brilliant player.
How good is he, Steve? Absolutely in the pantheon of great Arsenal players.
Fantastic player. He's like George Armstrong in the 74-75 team. Absolutely brilliant. The team was destined for relegation. He could have played in that team's championship side or whoever they were.
Derby.
Yeah. Sanchez.
Very good there, Kev.
Sanchez is like a jewel in a sea of absolute garbage. I mean, you can see. I mean, what is the point of Alexis Sanchez? He's playing brilliant every week. Without him, we would probably be in the bottom five without his goals. His 12 goals that he scored. Where would we be without them? He's the only one that's scoring. Can't remember the last bloke that scored apart from him. Now he's going to get quickly disillusioned playing with an idiot manager who doesn't respect anyone but himself, a clueless keeper, a couple of rubbish centre-halves, no midfield to speak of. He's going to be off on the first boat, isn't he?
Kev, have you been impressed with him so far? And well, why do you think he's settled in? Why do you think he's settled in so quickly?
A bit of me thinks maybe he doesn't understand a word Arsene Wenger's saying. And that could be the key. So what we need is the players not to listen to the manager at all and do their own thing, maybe.
What a great indictment, man. A brilliant, lovely club. The fifth or sixth richest club in the world. And the players have to get together and say, don't listen to the manager.
Well, I mean, a bit of me wonders. I mean, because it's interesting that the better players this season, over the course of all the games, have been the new boys.
Yes.
Sanchez, Welbeck.
Chambers started well as well, didn't
Chambers, he? Chambers, Debuchy before he got injured. And a bit of me wonders if the players that have been around longer have basically lost motivation because they know. They know that with this manager, we're not going to win anything. And psychologically, they, as far as the whole season's concerned, even they are bored of just getting into fourth place. Because at the end of the day, when a player finishes his career, he doesn't look back and think, we made fourth 10 years in a row. It doesn't really... It's not the same as having a winner's medal on the mantelpiece. So I think players, like fans, really enjoy winning things. And OK, that might be a domestic cup. The players were really into it when we won the FA Cup. And I wonder if there's a sense of drift now amongst the longer-term players in that they know. Because a lot of them that have come from abroad have worked under other managers. And they know that Wenger's basically a clueless idiot. And that Arsenal are not going to win things with him. The FA Cup was fluked, let's face it. We did our best
to throw it away, didn't we?
Absolutely.
Beating Wigan on penalties and going 2-0 down against Hull City.
Mike, Sanchez has been great this season. And compared to our other big money signing, Ozil, Brilliant hasn't been performing to such expectations. But can you imagine and envisage a time where those two are on both on song playing for us? Think positive, Mike. Can you see it coming? Ozil comes back, he's feeding the ball to Sanchez, we're watching some glorious stuff. Could it happen, Mr. Francis?
Probably not.
Listeners,
I'm trying to G him up for the last 10 minutes. It isn't easy.
It is depressing, isn't it? I'm not sure whether we're going to see Ozil again. You know,
Do you really mean that? Do you think he could be off in January?
That is bad news.
Do you think he could go in January? There are rumours.
There's rumours, and you just look at his commitment, didn't you? In the opening games of this season, he wasn't the player that he was even when he joined us last year. I mean, you know, when he first joined, those first 2-3 months, you went, we've got a player here. You know, work rate is shit, but style quality. But after that, I mean, he's just lost it. And this season, you know, you even begin to question, it's like, where's the style quality gone? His passing's gone astray. He's not taking players on. And I think I've said on the podcast before, I always thought Ozil with Theo would be great because Ozil would find for those runs that Theo makes. But, you know,
they've only played together five times, I think.
Yeah, well, then, you know, maybe I'll hold on to that and try
and
try. It can happen.
But surely...
But the thing with Sanchez, just going back to Sanchez, you know, we're obviously all expert football managers, having worked not half a day of football, but we've also become expert body language readers. You know, because every time you say Sanchez sort of there and he's sort of shaking his head or he's showing despair, we're going, oh, well, that's it. He's off in January, isn't he? He can't wait to get out of here. I don't think that's probably the case, but I can understand his frustration. And I do wonder if come next summer we haven't stepped up a notch.
So for 10 years, everyone's saying, "Oh, Wenger's had no money to spend. We're rubbish because he's had no money to spend." The stadium's taking. He's done so brilliant to get us in the top four with no money, right? As soon as he's got money to spend, the two signings, Ozil and Sanchez, right? Ozil looks like he's going to be a flop, from what everyone's been saying, and may well be sold in January. Sanchez has been a huge success, but the rest of the team's let him down. So he's going to be walking as soon as he bloody can, if he's got any sense. So what does that say about Wenger's managerial kind of... As soon as they give him money to spend, he signs two players that can't wait to leave.
So would you give him any money to spend in January?
It's ridiculous.
That was my last question, Mike. Thank you. Yeah. That's all right. Yeah. No, that's why you're the publisher. So in January, will Wenger sign anyone? It's the last question. Think about it seriously.
Well, I mean, we will. Will we sign the quality we want? Will we sign it in the positions we need? God only knows. I wouldn't bet on it.
On January the 31st, he'll send someone.
Yeah. But Kim Kallstrom's available.
Yeah. Oh my God, if he is going to sign anyone, it needs to be January the 1st, for God's sake. Yeah. Not flipping January the 31st. And would you give Wenger any more money to spend? Well, if it was me, I'd sack Wenger tomorrow and I'd get Tony Pulis in.
But we've established...
Steve, he would turn those players we've got into decent players.
We've established, yeah, Wenger's probably not going anywhere.
No.
So how much money do we give him in January, and who does he spend it on?
Well, there's talk of Hummels, isn't there? If Hummels is mad enough to sign for us, well, then I'd love Hummels, obviously. He's a good player, and maybe, Sanchez and Ozil might be, reinvigorated with Hummels in the back four. But that's just basically icing over the cracks or whatever it is, because I don't think Chesney is a good keeper. Chesney has to go, and Wenger's going to sign players, fine, but I wouldn't give him tuppence. I'd get a new manager in.
Have you got any expectations for January, Kevin?
Well, he's already stated publicly he will sign a defender, so we will see a defender arrive. Much more than that, not convinced, no. I think he'll hold his fire until the summer, and it's then...
Groundhog Day all over again.
It is, rather. I mean, the point being, we had an opportunity of takeoff, of liftoff, of winning the Cup.
Indeed.
We had the money to do it. We were well positioned to strengthen and address the weaknesses. We didn't. And you don't get too many chances like that.
You do if you answer Wenger, though.
Well, no, I mean, like, in terms of the actual... The moment of opportunity is the...
To become a winning team.
The Black Power movement used to say, seize the moment.
Yes. Mm.
And we didn't seize it.
No.
And I'm afraid that is down to one man and one man only. Mm. And this purgatory will continue until he's carried out of the stadium in a box.
Well, on that cheery note, that's sadly it. I hope at home you haven't chucked yourself off a building or hung yourself. The Samaritans are there if you need them at any time. I've got the number to hand, but feel free to give them an AM call.
And you could always tweet me some cheering up.
My word. So time has got the better of us for this pod. Before we go, I'm going to hand you over to Mr. Cheerful himself, Kevin, to talk about the latest issue of Britain's Best Football Fanzine.
Yes, the latest issue of the Gooner, issue number 246, will remain on sale for the home games against Manchester United and Dortmund and any away games around this time. And the issue is packed with great articles. Unfortunately, it is not a feel-good issue. And remember that this was put together before the Anderlecht and
Swansea
matches. So, our writers aren't stupid. They can see the writing on the wall. So it's a realistic take, but there's some really great writing about the situation at the club, as well as a very good interview with Amy Lawrence on Happier Days, in which she talks about her Invincibles book and the Invincible season generally, which will cheer anybody up.
I've read that book. It's very good.
It is.
Interviews with every player who played in that team, apart from...
Oh.
Who, Steve?
Don't know.
One player refused to be interviewed for the own book. the Invictus Games. Ashley Cole.
Ashley Cole.
Yeah. But it's a very good book. Exceptional. Anyway, don't forget, oh, sorry, is that it, Kev?
Well, it's just £2.50 available on your route to the stadium at all the home matches.
And if you're
and untold, by mail order.
And if you're an untold Arsenal fan, you won't like it.
Thank you, Steve. Don't forget, you can email us with any questions. I won't quiz Steve on politics or his love for talk sport. The email address is goonapodcast@gmail.com. The Twitter account, which was going crazy for this edition, thank you very much for that, is @GoonaPodcast. And by next month, there'll be a Facebook page, a Snapchat thing. Who knows where Kim's going to stop?
The world is our oyster.
Instagram, it's going to be crazy. But anyway, it's time to say goodbye. Thank you, Steve.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Mike.
Very depressing, but fun nevertheless.
And Kevin?
A special hello to Mr. Joe Broadfoot and come out from behind the toothpaste.
Yes, Joe, you were spotted in Tunbridge Wells boots, but we shan't go into any more details than that. We'll be back in December with the next pod. Don't know who'll be hosting that one, but you can rest assured it'll be someone brilliant. I'm Mark Ollington, and we'll see you again next time.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company.
Well, hey!